This episode of Enough, the Minimal Mac podcast, is brought to you by HipChat. Your search for a team collaboration tool is over. HipChat combines the best stuff from IRC with collaboration features like drag-and-drop file sharing, searchable chat history, and persistent group chat rooms. HipChat has desktop apps for Windows, Mac, and Linux, a web app, native iPhone app, and an Android app that's coming soon. HipChat also works with services you already use, like GitHub, Pivotal Tracker, Zendesk, Get Satisfaction, and many more. Sign up for a 30-day free trial at hipchat.com and join thousands of other companies who said goodbye to IRC, Google Talk, and Skype.
Hey there, Mike.
Hello, Pat.
How are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have sitting directly across from me my good friend, back with us on the show. He's been on before, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Julio?
I'm very good. It's tropical here in Minnesota right now, and since I'm from the tropics originally, I'm very, very, very happy, unlike a lot of Minnesotans who prefer the cold for some reason.
This is brutal. We need to set this up for people, especially for Mike, who rarely sees the sun being over in Great Britain, and when they do, it's a national holiday.
Yeah, country shuts down.
Yeah, whole country goes to the beach. They all pack into a single car, and they drive
to big bus.
And they drive to Bournemouth.
Lorry.
Mm-hmm. A lorry. Yeah. they pack themselves into a lorry. So it's really hot here. We've been suffering through. Upper 90s with dew points above 80, very, very high humidity in the 80 to 90% range, and thus the heat indexes have been well over 100. I think the heat index tomorrow is due to be 115.
Hey.
Yeah. And this is all Fahrenheit, folks, so you can convert for Celsius, but I believe in Celsius that converts to damn hot.
And these are extreme temperatures, just as, you know, when the temperature, you know, goes well below zero in January, those are also extreme temperatures. But I'm the sort of person when, you know, presented with a choice, you know, I would pick the heat and humidity every single time, and I have conversations with incredulous Minnesotans who just can't believe it.
No, give me the cold. I'll take the cold every time.
No, never.
Because here's the thing with me, right? It gets to be over about 75 degrees, and I just start dripping. I mean, I'm one of those people who sweats profusely if I exert even just a modicum of effort. I mean, it's shameful. You'd think that I, like, never exercise or something like that. But, I mean, even when I do, like, when I go running, you know, pretty much, you know, it's like, you know, one stride, two stride, sweat. Pouring sweat. I just pour sweat.
It's a little known fact that Pat has a plastic covering on his MacBook Air if he types too far.
I probably do. Mm-hmm. I probably should if I don't, right? That's... Yeah, but hey, we're not here to talk about the weather. I just wanted to set people up with why we're sitting in a room that I spent running the air conditioning on high in my non-air conditioned house for a good 2 hours before Julio got here. And that, by the end of this podcast, we're both going to be probably dripping with sweat. Oh, isn't that a lovely picture to put in our our listeners' minds?
I can go in the show notes.
So Julio, tell me how you've been lately. What's been up?
Well, I've been good. Kind of the reason I'm sitting here with you is because your podcast it serves in a way as my Mr. Miyagi. I listen to your podcast not only because it's it's often tech focused, but it's also a source of enlightenment, a source of inspiration, a podcast that helps me be a better person.
Aw.
And which is why it will never leave my podcast subscription list, as many other podcasts have recently, which I'll get into later. And so when I recently aspired to go on a journey of discovery, which I will describe in detail, I developed this overwhelming urge to tell you guys about it.
Oh.
Because I just want to give back as much as I've gotten from you guys. You guys have been a source of inspiration for me. And so I want to share my own journey of discovery, which I recently went through, which just very interesting for me and has made me a better person.
Well, do tell. I'm going to
set the scene by sort of telling you a story that took place a few years ago. My parents very generously paid for all of my siblings and all of their grandkids to fly out to a tropical island in the British Virgin Islands.
Nice.
Very generous. I'm from the tropics, so, you know, beach, palm trees, you know, what could possibly go wrong? You know what I'm saying? I'm in.
Sand can get in some pretty interesting places if you sit on it, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that could go wrong. Exactly. But go ahead.
Exactly. Especially if you're doing, you know, certain things on the beach. Let's not go there. But here's the rub. I get to this island and it suddenly dawns on me. It's completely, utterly disconnected. There's no signal. At least for the phone that I had, there's no Wi-Fi. There are no computer terminals. There's nothing. It's basically a place where you go to completely disconnect.
Yeah.
And some people aspire to do that. They want that. My parents, you know, are pretty handy with computers, but they only take them in small doses. They come from, you know, their background is not computer related. You know, because they go back, you know, well before the age of the personal computer. So they were fine with that. They just took, you know, their paperback books and their sunglasses and their sunscreen, and they were fine. And I don't disconnect very well. You know, people say, you know, you're kind of obsessed with the internet and technology. You should disconnect sometimes. And my response is always, yeah, that's fine, but I'm actually happy when I'm connected. You know, your point that I overconnect is well taken, but for me, completely disconnecting is cruel and unusual punishment. I don't do that. If I can't check my email, if I can't check my RSS feeds or my Twitter, I'm unhappy. I stress out, and I enjoy sort of dipping into those pools even when I'm on vacation and I'm not supposed to be technically working. So that trip, you know, it was a great family reunion, but every time I look back on that trip, I had this, you know, sour taste in my mouth because it was, in some ways, it was punishment for me. I was was hugely relieved when I re-entered, you know, the high-tech world and I was able to get online. So that was some confirmation of something I already knew. I don't disconnect well. I want to stay connected at all times.
Within the digital womb, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't
exactly.
Be ripped from it, screaming and kicking and crying.
Exactly. So that trip was one extreme, but there's the other extreme that I often plunge into, which is I overdo it. I'm on my Twitter all the time. I'm on my Facebook all the time. I drive my wife nuts because I'm always playing with my phone. I write about technology for a living. I'm obsessed with technology personally, so it's tech, 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 internet, internet, internet. And it gets to the point where this becomes so obsessive that I crowd out other things that I should have in my life that would enrich it.
Yeah.
I just become this very narrow-minded, very overly tech-focused person. And that, you know, quite frankly, makes me a less than ideal human being. And this is a problem. And this is a problem that I've known I've had for very long. So I was recently presented with an opportunity. My wife needed to go visit her parents for family reasons. She took my son with her, and they went for a whole month. And I chose to view this as an opportunity because it was an opportunity for me to disconnect from my marriage, disconnect from being a father. I also availed myself of some vacation time for most of that period.
So
basically disconnected
from work,
from everything, from work, from my wife, from my son. Just disconnected, and I set sort of a nebulous goal for myself, which is try to find some balance.
Okay.
Just hook up with my inner Mr. Miyagi and try to find some balance, try to make my life a little more balanced, and also try to enrich my life, try to sort of nudge out, you know, some of this tech stuff that I'm continuing, that I'm always focused on, and try to focus on some stuff that isn't techie, you know, some other interesting stuff that will make my life more enjoyable, will enrich me and therefore make me a better person, and therefore, by extension, eventually, when my wife gets back, make me a better husband, better father.
Yeah, yeah. And which is what it's about, right?
Which is what it's all about. I just want to be a better person, not only for myself, but also for the people that are with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen, but, you know, I had some goals, one of which was to cook. I don't cook much. My wife is kind of in charge of the kitchen. I know how to cook. I cook on occasion, but my wife was gone and I needed to feed myself. And I can't afford, like, to go out to restaurants every night. So I obviously needed to, put food in my mouth. But what a great opportunity to not just, you know, in a very basic sense, just cram food in my mouth, but to just try to find my inner foodie.
Yes.
And so what eventually happened was I focused on chicken. I became obsessed with chicken. Chicken is my favorite meat. And I love ethnic food.
Yeah, yeah. And so I noticed on Twitter it seemed like every night you were tweeting about some new wonderful thing you were trying out and making, and seemed like, you know, whenever anyone mentioned what they were making, you were like, oh, I want that recipe. And I thought that was really interesting transformation to watch you go through.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I didn't intend it to work out this way, but I eventually focused on chicken and then sort of hopscotched from country to country and made Moroccan chicken and Puerto Rican chicken and Brazilian chicken. And here's where technology comes back in. I blogged about this on my personal blog. I tweeted it out to people. Mm. I discovered the iPhone is a remarkably good camera.
Yes, yes.
Much better than I expected, because I found the perfect place to put, you know, my creations.
Yeah.
With the perfect lighting, and then I took pictures with the iPhone, and I took some amazingly good pictures.
And that's something I've been writing about on the site quite a bit lately.
Yes.
Yeah. Is how, you know, how overlooked the iPhone is as a camera.
Exactly. It is my only camera. It's the only camera I use, frankly. And so my whole point is, I decided to de-emphasize tech for tech's sake, connect with some other areas, and then bring a technology to bear at the service of these pursuits.
Yeah.
And so when I was cooking, my iPad was my cookbook.
Yeah.
I would pull up recipes on the iPad, and that was my standard way to access this information via a variety of cooking apps, via recipes that I had sort of archived in my Gmail account, and then just kind of pull them up.
Yeah.
And what apps did you use?
Yeah, we got this is kind of a technology show, so we got to ask that question.
My favorite is All Recipes, which is a very, I'm not sure how to describe it, sort of a Zen-like app, because when you pull it up, these pictures of dishes, you know, start to float into view. This collage, you know, you see all these dishes kind of floating back and forth.
Eat me.
And then you can change what you see by refining. You know, we want certain ingredients or certain, you know, breakfast versus dinner. You can sort of refine what you see. But basically, you sit there and just let these tiles sort of float into view. And then when you see something you like, you just tap it, get the recipe.
Neat.
Yeah, okay. So that's one of the apps that I like the most. There's something called Chef Sleeve I've written about. There's this local guy here who created it's a sort of a baggy like thing where you put your iPad in to protect it, you know, from all the ingredients that are splashing back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, but here's a cheap pro tip. 10-gallon Ziploc bag works great.
That's what
I use in the kitchen. I also use my, I store a lot of recipes actually in Yojimbo, and use the Yojimbo app for the iPad to access those. And so I too use my iPad a lot in the kitchen. And when I do, I just take a gallon Ziploc bag out of the box in the drawer, and throw it in there, and you can touch through it. It works great. I mean, it's not unlike the chef's sleeve, and you know, I want to help a Minnesota company for sure. So I'll definitely link to that to the show notes. I'm betting that the chef sleeve is, you know, form fitted to the iPad size and whatnot. You know, the thing about like just throwing a gallon Ziploc bag is you have all this extra space and it slides around in there, and it's not ideal, but it certainly works in a pinch, and well, it costs pennies. So
yeah, exactly. The iPad is a perfect, you know, cooking companion, you know, provided you make an effort to protect it with, yeah, you know, with some kind of a bag-like solution.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's then the worst companion.
Yes.
Covered in flour and dough.
Well, and then after that, it becomes no companion until you go down and buy another one. Because, you know, like any technology, you don't want to get it messy, and especially you don't want to get it wet. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then one of my projects during my trip, again, to sort of bring technology to the cooking sphere, is I had this huge pile of cookbooks that I had sort of been meaning to get to. And so I cracked a Diet Pepsi in my air conditioned kitchen. You know, sat down at the kitchen table, and sort of, you know, and I sort of paced myself because I had all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. I just took a cookbook and
started flipping through it.
If something looked interesting, I got my iPhone. It took a picture of the pages of that recipe.
Okay.
And then emailed them to Evernote.
Ah, yeah. Well, because it, yeah, and I've bagged on a little bit on Evernote before for its lack of proper export capabilities. But one of the things that Evernote does very, very well is if you subscribe to the premium version or whatnot, whatever the subscription plan is called, I forget, it gives you image OCR capabilities.
It does do it in the free version.
Oh, does it?
It just takes longer. So you get, there's a queue, so that all the images go into a queue, and they're OCR'd, and if you're in premium, you jump ahead of the queue. So it will still do it, but you might just wait, I don't know, a couple of hours.
Gotcha. So that's great, because you can take, because it works really great, like with business cards, for instance. If someone hands you a business card, you can just take an iPhone photo of it, hand it back to them, because now it's in your, you know, you shoot it up to your Evernote, and it will OCR it. So now when you need to search for, you know, oh, what was that guy I met? I just remembered he was from XYZ company. You can just search in Evernote for XYZ, and boom, that business card will be one of the things that pops up. And I would imagine that with recipes, that gets super extra awesome.
Yeah,
Evernote definitely seems to be an app for foodies.
Yeah, exactly. And so my goal was essentially to create this customized cookbook of recipes that sort of resonated with me, that I would sort of compile into this Evernote cookbook. It may be years before I get to many of these recipes.
But still, that's a great use.
But
great
I had the time to sort of get ahead of myself and create this repository that will then enrich me, you know, going forward. Instead of sort of, up to this point, I've always felt like I'm scrambling to find something to cook.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a backlog, you know, a repository of recipes that I can call on, recipes that I know I will want to cook.
Gotcha.
And now I'm ahead of the game. I've got recipes, you know, stored, you know, for years to come.
Nice.
And so that's, you know, that's one example of, you know, this little project that I sort of picked off because I just had the time to do it.
Yeah.
I had the tech tools to sort of pull it off in an elegant and useful way.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think that's something I'm increasingly trying to put across to people. There are lots of folks just like you, and I'm even like this at times to a certain extent, where, those of us that work in technology and work, especially in your case and to a certain extent mine, talking about it, writing about it, reporting about it, we do so because we're interested in it in the first place, right? But the caveat to that is it can consume us. And because it's everywhere and because we have the potential to be always connected, we can fall into the trap of feeling like we have to always be connected. And forgetting that the technology is there for the purpose of enhancing our interactions, both with other people with the things that give us pleasure, with the world around us, that's happening around us, that it shouldn't take the place of or get in the way of those things, right?
And I'm a slightly extreme example because I remain, you know, very obsessive in the sense I never want to disconnect.
Yeah.
I do not want to disconnect. I never want a half hour to pass before I've checked my Twitter and my RSS feeds. That will never change. Okay? I'm very sorry. That will never change. But my goal, you know, during this reset period was to remain connected, but redirect those online connections and put them to use in ways that will enrich my lives in ways that do not have to do with technology. Yeah. Reading, for instance, like I'm a big, I don't read enough. So I one of the other goals I set for myself during this period was to do a lot of reading.
Mm.
But I've gotten to the point where I've lost patience with the whole I go to the library and, you know, check out printed books thing. Mm-hmm. And there are increasingly ways to get ebook. You know, ebooks can get expensive though, but there are increasingly ways to get ebooks for free.
Yeah, through the library.
There's OverDrive. 3M is about to release an OverDrive competitor that does the same thing. You can basically check out books from the library electronically using your iPad, or you can do it on your computer and then transfer those loaner EPUB files to your Nook.
Oh, okay. What about the Kindle?
Not the Kindle.
Oh, wow. Really?
The Kindle...
Kindle doesn't support EPUB, does it?
Well, the Kindle is going to support OverDrive at some point in some proprietary way in the near future. But I've increasingly encouraging people to stay away from the Kindle and go for a Nook.
Oh, wow. Really?
Or a Sony Reader or a Kobo Touch.
Interesting.
I saw one of the Nook Simple Touches on a train the other day, and I was very impressed.
Yeah,
it's just
that is an impressive looking piece of hardware.
Exactly. You're talking about the one that's just this minimalist little black and white touch
just
device.
All
right?
It is just a tiny little screen, and it's the UI looked really pretty, and it looked very comfortable to hold.
Yeah,
that's the one I primarily used during my vacation, and that was my primary like go to device for reading, and I got a lot of reading done.
Yeah.
A ton of reading, and some of it I'm embarrassed to say had to do with technology.
Yeah.
Julio, is that an ecosystem choice or a hardware choice, staying away from the Kindle? I mean, are you just unhappy with the Amazon ecosystem, or do you just really dislike the hardware as opposed to some of the competitors?
It's a little bit of both. The Nook device that you just described is my favorite because it's very minimalist and very elegant. Barnes & Noble has leapfrogged Amazon in terms of the elegance of its hardware for the first time. Mm-hmm. Its older Nook incarnations were very struck me as very awkward and poorly designed. But now the Kindle, in my opinion, looks and acts a bit prehistoric. Compared to the Nook, because the Nook is, you know, doesn't have that keyboard, which nobody needs, and it's a touch device. It's a very, very good touch device. It doesn't, there's the touch, as I understand it, does not mean you're directly interacting with the screen, but rather there are sensors along the edges that sort of mimic the touch experience, but you can't really tell the difference.
Yeah, it's infrared. All done by infrared.
But it works amazingly well. But to your question, I'm primarily gravitating towards the Nook because of the openness. It's not a closed environment that limits your options. You can get any EPUB file. You can get a purchased EPUB file or a library loaner EPUB file or a generic EPUB file. You can put anything you want on there.
And might I recommend my book, Keeping It Straight, which is available on EPUB through Google. Just thought I'd insert that. Okay, go ahead, William.
And I have a couple of books out there, too.
iPad means business.
iPad means business. I've heard of that.
iPad means...
And Twitter means business, yeah.
Business.biz, or is it dot...
The website is iPadMeans.biz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I do also not have available. A book.
Yeah.
Well, we should change that soon.
There's a radically updated version of it coming out very shortly, and I'll send you the PDF for free. So.
And then you can just edit it, put your name on it, and then you will have a book.
All right. I don't think I'll ever have a book.
You'll let your golden velvet voice do the talking.
But Mike, to sort of riff on your point, I got to this happy place, as it were, because A, I found the perfect reading device. B, I found the perfect ecosystem, which is being able to get these books for free from your public library, you know, without breaking the budget. And, you know, another goal that I set for myself during my time alone was to find the perfect reading chair so that I could read on my balcony. The furniture we have out on the balcony sort of kills my back. So I went on this quest to find the perfect chair, and I actually made a few purchases and brought them home, and they didn't quite work out. And in the greatest of ironies, I just happened to be down in the basement, and I saw this folding wooden chair sort of off in a corner gathering dust and saying, what is that? And I dusted it off and took it up to the balcony and discovered, to my delight, it is the perfect chair. And so now, you know, and so I had these wonderful moments with a Diet Pepsi in one hand and the Nook in the other hand, you know, reading a library book in my dream chair with the crickets starting to do their thing in the evening. And I was just unspeakably happy. And the word staycation sort of comes to mind. A lot of people think, you know, a vacation isn't a vacation unless you go to some exotic locale.
Yeah.
No. You don't even need to leave home.
Exactly. I live on a really nice street with really nice neighbors, lots of trees. It's a very pleasant place to be, but I had never really realized that. I had never really allowed myself to experience this until now, because my wife and I purchased our house, you know, just a couple of years ago, and the previous two summers were filled with home improvement projects. It was literally hell on earth. I mean, there was so much going on that we just never had a chance to relax and just enjoy where we were. But this summer, you know, my family left. I was by myself. I was off work. I didn't have any, aside from watering the plants, per my wife's instructions, I didn't have a whole lot to do house-wise. And I suddenly was able to just pause and look around and smell and realize, this is paradise. I live in paradise. I'm on a great street with great neighbors, great city, really nice house. We're really happy with our house. And I just put all the pieces together in my head and just looked around and realized what I had. And, you know, I'm not a wealthy man in dollar terms or pound terms. But I'm the richest man on earth.
So I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
We're going to end this episode here, but I really want to continue this conversation for the next episode, because it leads into something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and that is the idea that it works around the idea of balance and the fact that we don't take enough time to recognize that that perfection is all around us, right? And even in our darkest moments, and even in our roughest times, there are simple things that we all can do, as if we've identified them beforehand, to at least bring us even just a modicum of pleasure. I wrote about this on patrickrone.com recently. So we're going to stop right there. And I'm going to have you back for the next episode. Is that okay with you, Mike?
It's absolutely fine by me.
All right, terrific. Well then, gentlemen, I guess we'll talk later.
Cheers.
Cheers, mates.